that will help out. Let's go back to the cabin. You're gonna love this. Back at our cabin, I started digging around in the ammo cans, looking for a silver package. When I pulled it out, I called over to Thad. Look at this. They're trip flares. Not real big, but at night, they'll give off plenty of light, enough to get our attention. Tearing open the package, I pulled out a box, opened it, and removed a smaller box about 3 inches long and an inch square. The small box contained a small white flare, some nails, and fence staples, a spring, and a roll of tripwire. Thad looked at the instructions, and then at the parts lying on the table. That's pretty neat. How bright is it? It's about as bright as a small road flare. Thad nodded and put the paper back on the table. We'll set it up after dark so no one sees us. Somewhere down the river, a shot rang out. Thad and I both looked up, anticipating more. The echo faded down the river, and it was quiet again. Mel stepped out of the cabin and shouted, "What was that?" "Jeff and Danny are out hunting gators. Maybe they got one," I called back. I looked off down the river for a moment, then went back inside. "Maybe we'll be having gator for supper tonight," Thad said with a grin. The faint sound of banging and some shouts drifted up the river. "Sounds like they're trying to get it in the canoe," I said. "Sounds to me like they already got it in, and it's trying to get out," Thad said with a laugh. I started to laugh at that mental image. Yeah, I can just see them trying to fight a gator they thought was dead. Yeah, up in the boat with him, and it wakes up. "Oh, shit, it's still alive," Thad said, doubling over. We were both laughing so hard we had to sit down. We sat watching the river expectantly, waiting to see the canoe come into view. "How do you like it cooked?" Thad asked. "I've only had it fried, to be honest. If we have the stuff, I got something I'd like to make. A gator picante." I looked over, eyebrows raised. "What's in it?" "Just peppers, onions, canned tomatoes, and seasoning, poured over a bowl of rice." "Sounds good to me. I know we still have dehydrated peppers and onions, canned tomatoes, too. I'll use the Dutch oven. Should be real good. Cook it slow." I could see Thad was already imagining it in a bowl. His dreams of gator picante were soon interrupted as the canoe came into view. I was surprised to see a not-so-happy Bobby sitting in the middle seat. Thad gave a low whistle. "She looks pissed." "I didn't know she went with them," I said, as I started walking toward the creek. Jeff was sitting in the bow of the canoe, a huge smile on his face. Danny was grinning as well. Quite the contrast between those two and Bobby. Thad called out, "How big is it?"
"At least a 9-footer," Jeff called back.
As soon as the bow of the boat ground to a halt in the mud, Bobby launched herself out and, without saying a word, headed for the cabin. As she passed, I noticed how wet she was. Looking back at Jeff and Danny, it was evident that they had gone for a little swim themselves. "What happened? Turn the boat over?" I asked. Jeff was pulling the canoe up.
"Yeah, getting one of these in the boat ain't as easy as it looks on TV."
"That why your wife is so pissed, Danny?"
"Yeah, it wasn't the getting wet part as much as the fact that she thought the blood from the gator would draw others in, like sharks. You should have seen her. Kind of funny, actually."
Once the boat was pulled up onto the shore, we looked at the big-ass lizard. It was lying in a dark pink soup, grass and debris floating around it. There was one bullet wound in the back of its head.
"Got it with one shot?" Thad asked.
Jeff smiled and held up his pheasant rifle.
"Yep, one of these was all it took."
"One of those is all it should take," I laughed.
"Oh, let's see you do it, Morg," he laughed.
"Well, let's get to work. I want to eat this sucker for dinner tonight," Danny said. It took all four of us to drag it out of the boat.
"Where are we going to clean it?" Jeff asked.
"Let's turn the canoe over and use that as a platform," Danny replied.
"Good idea," I chimed in. Once the gator was laid out, everyone grabbed a knife and went to work. The dogs were very interested in the beast. They kept getting in our way, smelling and barking at it. Every time it moved, as we worked on it, they would jump and bark more. Meathead grabbed it by the tail once and tugged. Thad had to kick him anyway. But it got a laugh out of all of us. We salvaged every piece of meat we could from the carcass. The tail and jowls of a gator are the main sources of meat, but the ribs and legs also can be edible. Legs generally aren't used because they are very sinewy, but that can be overcome by grinding or cubing them. Fortunately, Danny had his manual grinder, which meant we would have plenty to last us. While I generally keep some of the internal organs, nobody else was too keen on keeping them for our use. But they wouldn't go to waste. The heart, liver, and kidneys would be cooked and fed to the dogs, and the rest of the guts would be fed to the hogs. When we were done, we ended up with around 70 pounds of meat. "I want the skull," Danny said as we were finishing up. Jeff looked up. "What for?" "I'm going to strip it to the bone," he shrugged his shoulders. "You know, something to do." "How you going to do that? Sounds like a tough job." "Not really. I'll boil it for a while, then set it out on an ant mound. They'll take care of the rest." Jeff's eyebrows went up. "Sounds interesting. I'll help." "Cool," Danny said, as he ran a blade around the base of the skull, separating the head from what was left of the body. Thad picked up the bucket with the hog feet in it. "I'm going to give this to the pigs real quick." "Hey, how are we cooking this thing up tonight?" Jeff asked me. "Thad's got something planned for it," I replied. Jeff smiled and patted his stomach. "Can't wait. Thad's a master chef." Mel and Bobby were washing the meat off and putting it in buckets when Mel gave me one of her famous looks of, "You need to help out, and you need to help out now." "We have a problem," Mel said flatly. I looked up. "What is it?" "We're almost out of toilet paper." I stood up. "Ooh, that's not good. How much do we have left?" "Maybe a dozen or so rolls," Bobby said. I was worried that this day would come. "Unfortunately, ladies, there's not much we can do. We're going to have to stop using the TP.
"Stop using it? We need to figure out how to get more. What are we going to use if we stop using it? Leaves? I'm not using leaves," Mel said, her voice getting increasingly frantic.
"Calm down, Mel. I have a plan for this." "I hope so, 'cause I ain't using leaves either," Thad said with a chuckle. "I'll be right back," I said, heading off to the cabin. Back in the day, I'd read about this very issue. At the same time, I was studying up on various alternative methods for the issue at hand, as well as many other things, just to prepare for whatever may come. Not that I ever thought anything of this magnitude would ever occur, but I'm thankful now for all those hours of reading and research. Most publications talked about using a bidet. Not only did that not sound appealing, but under our current situation, it was completely out of the question. I knew that what I came up with, something used in many other countries, was probably going to be met with some resistance. I prepared myself for the blowback. As I was returning, everyone, including the girls, was at the picnic table. All eyes were on me and what I was carrying. I set everything down on the table for everyone to see. "Okay, now I'm worried," Danny said, picking up one of the long rubber gloves. "All right, boys and girls. The only option for this situation is to use a personal cloth," I said as I picked up a washcloth. "This does a better job if you wet it first." I took in the shocked faces of my oldest daughters. "This is done all over the world," I said, as if that would make any difference to them.
"Okay, but we don't have enough washcloths saved up. They'll be gone in the first day," Mel said.
I laughed. "We'll reuse them." That got a look of surprise from everyone.
"And, how exactly do we do that?" Jeff asked.
"I am not reusing one of those. That's just gross," Leanne added.
The rest of the girls, her mom and Bobby included, agreed with her.
Look, I know you guys aren't thrilled about this. Frankly, neither am I, but we don't have a choice. We will reuse them. You just have to wash it after use.
That statement was met with a chorus of complaints.
Calm down, I said, motioning with my hands for everyone to quiet down.
We need to save what TP we have left in case someone gets really sick. Everyone else will use the cloth, and you ladies will have two, one for number one and one for number two. When you are done with it, you'll wash it out. There will be a bucket with a solution of this.
I held up a bag of pool shock, calcium hypochlorite. You'll use this with these.
I picked up one of the gloves to wash your cloth.
There will be a second bucket of clean water to rinse with. Then you hang it up to dry.
This powder is essentially bleach. We'll mix a solution of it with water, not too strong, to sanitize the cloths.
For a moment, no one said anything. They just looked at the stuff on the table.
The two girls were shaking their heads.
This is bull, Leanne muttered.
I shot her a look.
We don't have a choice, guys. It's what we have to do. And it's important to clean your cloth thoroughly. We don't want anyone to get sick, I added.
Again, I was met with silent stares. Thad was the one to first come to my side.
Beats using leaves, he said, shrugging his shoulders.
I smiled.
The only other option is to use the Seminole Indian method.
The what?
Mel asked flatly, narrowing her eyes.
Hang on, I said, and jogged off toward the woods. I was smiling as I came back with my hands concealed behind my back. I rocked back and forth on my heels.
All right, what is it?
Mel asked as she crossed her arms over her chest.
The Seminoles use this for a number of things.
Wound dressings, TP, several things. As I said the last word, I revealed what I had been hiding. It was a piece of the inner fiber of the sable palm. It has an open weave and is a great source of dry tinder when nothing else can be found. It forms at the base of the fronds on the tree. Mel and Bobby both immediately scowled, shaking their heads.
I am not using that, Bobby quickly said.
Nope, me neither, Mel added.
Looks like it would hurt, Taylor said.
Leanne scowled.
I'm not about to wipe my butt with that. No way.
I picked up one of the cloths.
Doesn't look so bad now, does it?
Little Bit was standing beside me now. She picked one of the cloths up and looked at Mel.
Mommy, I have to go now. Can I try it?
I looked at her, then at Mel, and smiled.
Our first customer.
Mel rolled her eyes and took her by the hand, headed for the outhouse.
I'll get the bleach mixed up and bring it and the rinse water over, I said.
Well, I'm going to start dinner, Thad said.
He was met with a chorus of agreement.
Miss Bobby, can you get a pot of rice ready and show me where the dehydrated stuff is?
Bobby nodded and led Thad off.
I opened the bag of shock and went to the cabin for a couple of buckets.
With the buckets filled from the creek, I added the shock in the appropriate ratio, then took them, a solo cup, and the gloves over to the outhouse. Mel was leaning on the side of the structure, cloth in hand.
Here you go, I said, setting the buckets down. She did not look enthused.
Mel dipped the cloth in some of the clean water, wrung it out, and then handed it inside to Ashley.
Thanks, Mom, she called out.
For a moment, she was quiet. Then the door swung open and she came out, hitching up her pants. The cloth was folded in her hand and she held it out to Mel. Mel put on the gloves and dipped a cup in the bleach solution, pouring it over the soiled cloth and agitating it. After rinsing it and wringing it out, she looked up at me.
Where do I put it? She asked.
Just hang it on a limb, I said.
All right, she sighed.
This isn't too bad.
And it feels good, too,
Little Bit shouted, jumping up and down.
Chapter 10 When the music stopped, it took a moment for Jess and Fred to register it. Their ears were ringing badly, and everything sounded as if their heads were packed with cotton. Jess rolled onto her back, reveling in the silence. She fell asleep a few moments later, exhausted from the evening's events. Fred lay there, trying to ignore the ringing in her ears. Her head hurt so badly that for once, she was thankful it was dark. She had never experienced pain like this. Her body was on the brink of collapse. She could only imagine how Shane or the old man were faring in their respective cells. As if on cue, the door to Shane's cell was opened. Fred braced herself for the sound of water splashing, but she couldn't hear anything. Shane was so weak that he didn't even respond to the noise. His body hung limply from the restraints. A nurse entered the cell and checked him, running a digital thermometer across his forehead. "He's hypothermic. You need to warm him quickly, or he's gonna die, and soon." "Well, shit! I told you we should have checked on him last night," one officer said to another. "So what if he dies? Gonna happen sooner or later." "Yeah, well, Niigata wants it to be later. Come on, let's take him down." Shane was lowered to the floor, and old wool Red Cross blankets were brought in. The nurse laid a few on the floor, then covered him with the rest. "This isn't going to do it," she said, looking at the guard. "What else do you want us to do? How can you warm him up?" "Ideally, another person. Skin-to-skin contact is the best way." "What? Someone wrapped up with him in the blankets?" "Mm-hmm, that's the best way." The guard smiled and motioned for the other officer to follow him. "Where are you going?" the nurse asked. "To get you a warm body," he called over his shoulder as he twirled the keys on his finger. Jess was barely able to open her eyes before she was grabbed by the guard and pulled to her feet. "Get up! We've got a treat for you," a man's voice said.
"No, no."
She tried to protest, but she was so exhausted from the previous night, it was futile. "Come on," one of the men said, as they dragged her down the corridor and into another cell. Jess could make out what seemed like a body under a pile of blankets. The officers pulled her to her feet and removed her restraints, then issued a command that terrified her. "Strip!" Adrenaline shot through her body, horrible memories flooding her. Jess tried to bolt for the door, but she was still weak and feeble. One of the guards easily grabbed her arm and stopped her. She fought back and screamed, "You do it, or we'll do it for you!" one of the men shouted, as she was thrown back into the cell.
"Get away from me! Don't come near me!"
Jess screamed, as she backed away from the two men. Fred was lying on the floor of her cell when she heard Jess scream. She quickly got up and moved to the door.
"Jess? Jess, you all right?" she shouted.
Before Jess could respond, the nurse grabbed Jess by the shoulder and looked her square in the eyes.
"Look, we need you to warm him up. Get under the blankets with him. Skin-to-skin contact is the fastest way to warm someone up. He isn't going to hurt you. Look at him," she said, pointing to the motionless form under the blankets.
Jess looked at the mound under the blankets, then at the nurse, and last, the guards.
"It's going to happen one way or another, sweetheart," one of the officers said.
"Fuck you! Don't call me that!" Jess shouted.
She then looked back at the nurse, begging her with her eyes.
"Tell them to leave, and I'll do it."
The nurse turned to the officers. "Would you two get out of here? I'll make sure she gets undressed and show her how to lie with him." The two men stood their ground for a moment, eyeing Jess. Then one of them gave a dismissive wave.
"Fuck it, let's go," he said, and stepped out of the cell.
Jess watched the men leave, then looked at the nurse, twirling her finger to tell her to turn around. Jess took off the jumpsuit and laid it aside, then carefully lifted up the blankets to reveal a nude man. He was rather young and appeared to be totally unconscious. She lay down beside him, flinching when she first touched his skin. "You sure he's not dead?" she said, as she pulled the blanket over herself. The nurse turned around. "Not yet. That's why you're here with him. To keep that from happening."
"Oh my God, he's so cold. What did they do to him?" Jess said, as she stretched out alongside him.
"I don't know, but just stay there with him. I'll be back in an hour to check on you." Jess moved around to get comfortable. Despite the circumstances, lying on a blanket seemed heavenly after spending so much time on the bare concrete. Once she was somewhat comfortable, she thought about the man.
"This must be Shane.
You better not get any bright ideas when you wake up, buddy." After it was clear that the guards and nurse had left the building, Fred called out to her.
"Jess! Jess! You all right?"
"Yeah, I'm fine."
"What's going on? Why were you screaming?"
"I'll explain when I can. I'm in here with Shane, I think."
Fred was surprised.
"You're in there with him?"
Jess pulled the blanket up over her head.
"Yes, I'll tell you later. Now shh. I don't want to get us in trouble."
The reply came out muffled. Shocked, Fred fell back against the wall.
"What the hell is going on?"
"We're going to have to move tonight," Mike said, as he looked around the camp.
"Yeah, we've seen everything there is to see on this side," Ian replied. "Wonder if the music is going to start up again," he murmured, looking through the spotting scope.
Mike looked toward the small rectangular building.
"I don't know, but it's obvious they're working someone over in there."
"Think we should make that a priority when we hit it? See who's in there?"
"I'd say so, but that's up to the old man and your officers to decide," Mike replied, adjusting the binoculars.
Ian laughed.
"Let's be real, it's totally up to Sarge. Don't get me wrong, my officers are nice guys, but even they admitted it."
Mike looked over. "Admitted what?"
"That they're scared shitless of going in there. They're National Guard, not Special Forces."
Mike clicked his tongue.
"Well, he told them they'd have to earn their money."
"Well, that's one thing about them. Whatever has to be done, they'll do their best. There was a lot of discussion after you guys left the first time. Lots of talk about what might happen. No one knows other than me and the brass, but everyone suspects they're going to be pushed into action."
"The captain hasn't said anything to the troopers about what they're going to have to do?" Mike asked.
"Not yet, but these guys are smart. Seeing you guys in the camp, they've caught on that something's coming. They think you guys are like Delta Force or something."
Mike started to laugh.
"Delta Force? That's funny as hell."
He dropped his face into his hands and laughed even harder. When he looked up, he had tears in his eyes. Wiping them away, he said,
"Delta Force! Oh, that's rich."
Ian shrugged.
"Just telling you what they're saying."
Mike nodded and went back to observing the camp, still chuckling from time to time. Throughout the day, they watched the small building with special attention, making notes any time it was approached by the staff. It was during one of these times that Ian called Mike's attention to it.
"Hey man, check out 7. Looks like they might be bringing in food."
Mike was on the spotting scope this time and swung it quickly over to the building. There were 3 individuals approaching the building, carrying what appeared to be trays.
"Looks like food trays. Let me try and get a count," Mike said, as he focused the scope. "It looks like 5 trays, could be 6.
Ian made a note.
"All right, possibly 6, no less than 5.
"Yeah, that's the best I can see. Go wake Teddy up. We should relocate soon."
Ian nodded and slowly backed out of the hide. As soon as he was outside, he gave a low whistle. Ted turned around and nodded,
and then turned back and scanned the area in front of him. Ian started packing up his gear. It wasn't long before Ted crawled up, cradling the saw on his elbows.
"You guys ready to move?" he asked.
"Yeah. I figure we'll get packed up, grab some grub, and move out after dark."
"Cool. See anything new?"
They brought what looked like food trays into the building, 5, maybe 6 of them. Ted nodded and then looked up through the trees. The tops were gently swaying in the breeze, and for a moment, he was mesmerized by them. Ian glanced at him, then looked up to see what he was staring at. Not seeing anything of note, he waved a hand in front of Ted's face.
"Earth to Teddy? Mike thinks we should make that building our priority when we hit the camp," Ian said.
"Sorry."
"Yeah, probably," Ted replied, as he pulled an MRE out of his pack. Ian looked at him for a moment.
"You all right?"
"I'm good. Just need a vacation," Ted said with a laugh.
"Me too. Somewhere with a beach and topless chicks."
Ted dumped out the contents of his MRE pouch.
"Ugh. Don't even get started on women."
Mike crawled up.
"Women? What women?"
"That's the problem. There ain't none," Ted said with a laugh.
While they ate, the three traded locker room stories and whispers of their various escapades. When the meal was done, they packed all of their trash, stuffing everything back into their packs. When all their gear was packed, they did a very careful check of the hide to make sure nothing was left behind.
"Mike, you want to call in to the old man real quick?" Ted asked.
Mike nodded and sat down beside the radio. Putting on the headset, he made the call.
"Stump knocker, stump knocker. Cracker One."
The reply came immediately.
"Send it, Cracker One."
"Moving to next. All's quiet."
"Roger that. Cracker Two report."
Perez picked up the handset.
"Cracker Two, all's quiet."
"Roger that, Cracker Two. Stump knocker out."
Livingston looked at Sarge.
"Well, sounds like your boys are doing all right. Wonder how long they'll be out."
Sarge rubbed the stubble on his chin.
"Hard to say. They'll stay out as long as they need to. Them two are nuttier than squirrel shit, but they are good at what they do."
He paused and nodded respectfully.
"Sounds like your crew is all right, too."
"Perez is an old salt. He got several tours under his belt. When he was younger, he was one of those guys that always looked for a deployment. He liked it better when bullets were flying past him. As he got older, he came over to the guard to finish off his retirement. He's not as gung-ho as he used to be, but he's still a dangerous old bastard."
Sarge nodded.
"That's good. We'll need some dangerous old bastards, and some young ones, too. We've got plenty of young ones. Problem is, most of them haven't been deployed before. We had a pretty big turnover right before the shit hit the fan. Lost a lot of seasoned guys. I'm worried how they'll react when the lead starts to fly."
Sarge spit into the dirt.
"I'm hoping to come up with a way to get into the camp without a lot of shooting."
"How the hell do you expect to do that?" Livingston asked. "It's not like they're just going to let us walk through the gate." Sarge shrugged.
"They might, if they don't know any better."
He stood up.
"All right, we'll discuss more later. I'm gonna go talk to Doc and see how everything is going."
Sarge left the command tent and wandered through the camp, observing the people as he went. Soldiers and civilians alike had weapons on them. Good for the safety of the settlement, he thought. They would probably need some of the civilians to assist in the assault. The camp was large and was going to be a hell of a job to take down. Doc and several others were tossing the last of the dirt into the pit. Sarge stood at the edge of the pit, examining the scene. Several pipes were sticking out of the ground, with tar paper cones on top.
"Nice piss tubes, Doc," Sarge said.
Doc looked up, shovel in hand.
"Gee, thanks."
Sarge pointed at the pit.
"What's in there?"
Harmon looked up from where he was throwing dirt.
Old Doc there's pretty smart. We crushed a ton of cans with a truck, used it to line the pit about 3/4.
He pointed at the fresh dirt. And now, we're filling in the rest with dirt. Sarge looked confused.
Cans? What the hell for?
It acts as a drain field. This will last a lot longer than just digging a pit.
Doc pointed at one of the tubes.
They travel all the way down to the cans. It's the best we could do.
Well, glad someone knows something about this. Sarge stepped up to one of the tubes. Allow me to break it in for you.
Doc shook his head, but couldn't help himself and smiled. As Sarge was taking care of business, he asked,
What about the ladies?
Doc pointed off to the east.
We made a couple of slit trenches for them over there. There are also some fresh slit trenches for defecating in. They're deeper. And we have barrels of wood ash for people to pour in after use. Lime would be better, but we don't have any.
Sarge had finished up and asked,
Where do we shit?
Doc pointed at a tarp sprung up between two poles as a screen.
Back there's our slit trenches. You gonna break that in too?
He asked with a grin.
Sarge patted his belly.
Nah, not yet. The crap we're eating has me bound up tighter than Dick's hat band. Haven't had your prune juice in a few days, huh? Fuck you, Doc,
Sarge said with a smile.
Doc smiled back. Love you too.
Sarge shook his head and spun on his heels.
I'll take point, Ted said, as he flipped his NVGs down over his eyes.
They were slowly heading east to scope out the front gate. As the sun had set, a breeze had picked up. In the green glow of the optics each man wore, they could see the trees swaying back and forth. The three men stayed about 15 feet apart, moving in a staggering pace. Ted was in the lead. He would take 5 or 6 steps and pause, then Ian would walk up and stop, then Mike would follow. This way, there was always at least one person looking and listening. As they made their way around the camp, the artificial light from the towers helped so they could clearly see their way. Hearing vehicles outside the perimeter, they halted and took a knee. The times and direction of travel were noted. Ted made sure they were at the tree line, but checked his compass. They were now on a northerly track, with the main gate in sight. It was time to start looking for a hide. Through the NVGs, Ted could see light off to his right. It was in the opposite direction of the camp, which was puzzling. He halted and whispered to Ian that he wanted to check it out. The group moved slowly toward the lights. As they got closer, they could hear people shouting, then the sound of an engine revving up. Kneeling down, they tried to get a view of the activity, but there was too much brush.
Let's see what's up. We may need to find another way, Ted whispered.
The men dropped their packs and began to crawl toward the voices. After a few hundred yards, Ted stopped, and Mike and Ian came up on either side of him. In front of them was a bus and several Hummers. A group of people sat on the ground with armed men standing over them. Two of the Hummers were chained together, and they were trying to pull the bus out of the deep sand in the road, with no apparent luck.
Looks like they were bringing people in, Ian said, looking at the group.
Yeah, I don't think those two trucks are going to get that thing out either, Mike whispered.
Yeah, good luck with that, Ted whispered back.
The three men stayed in their positions, watching the futile efforts to get the bus out. After an hour or so, the crew working on it gave up. The guards ordered the group to their feet and began leading them toward the camp. The guys waited until the group was down the road, and then began to follow them while staying inside the tree line. When the main gate finally came into view, the three stopped and took up a position to observe. The gate was a fortified area with sandbag emplacements and a bunker on either side. On the inside of the gate, A large diesel-powered light tower with four bright heads illuminated the area. The group was led through the gate and disappeared into the camp. Once they were out of sight, Ted tried to get a count on the number of personnel stationed at the gate.
"I got five. How many you see?" Mike whispered.
"Well, that's what I got," Ted replied.
"Me too," Ian confirmed.
"This gate would be a breeze to take down," Ted said.
"I only see one machine gun in the bunker on the left," Ian said.
"Let's see what their response is like. Ian, you stay here. Mike, come with me. Ian, keep an eye on these guys and see what they do. I've got an idea."
"What do you want to do?"
Mike asked, as he knelt down behind a tree. Ted scoped out the area, then nodded toward the bus.
"I want to do something to get their attention."
Mike rooted around in a pouch on his plate carrier.
"I got a thermite grenade," he said, holding it up.
Ted scowled at him.
"No, dickhead. I don't want to burn it. They'd figure out something was up and start looking."
Mike shrugged and put the grenade away.
"I'm gonna run out and turn all the lights on and honk the horn. Then I'll run back and we'll see what these guys do."
"That's stupid.
They'll know someone's around then. I say burn it. Put that thermite on the engine and it'll look like an engine fire. Think about it. Plus, we'll take out one of their buses," Mike said.
Ted clicked his tongue, thinking about what Mike said.
"You're smarter than you look, kid. All right, go burn it. Let's see what they do."
Mike giggled like a little kid as he headed for the bus. Once he was behind it, he knelt down and looked around. Confident the area was secure, he quietly opened the engine compartment and took out the grenade, pulled the pin, and wedged it in between the air cleaner with the spoon up. As soon as he let go of it, the spoon flew off with a pop and a hiss. The fuse lit. He quickly closed the lid and made his way back to the side of the road. As he entered the woods, the grenade went off. Thermite grenades don't explode like a typical hand grenade. They simply ignite and begin to burn, turning into a fountain of molten metal as the iron and aluminum burn. Because of this, the engine compartment was quickly engulfed in flames. The fire spread throughout the bus within moments, flames leaping high into the night sky.
"Burn, baby, burn!"
Mike whispered. Ted was watching the road.
"You're a pyro, aren't you?"
"There's nothing wrong with having a little fun with incendiaries," Mike replied with a grin.
"Hey, here they come," Ted said as he elbowed Mike.
Headlights were coming down the road, and soon two Hummers came into view. The truck stopped short of the bus, and men got out. For a moment, they ran around, but without a fire truck, they were helpless. They settled for leaning on the hoods of their trucks and watching it burn.
"I count six. They must be the reaction force," Ted said.
"Yeah. Did you see how they ran around? What the hell did they think that was gonna do?"
One of the men was talking into a radio, and soon, a UTV side-by-side pulled up, and two more men got out. They stood with the others as the bus burned, gesturing at the inferno. After a few minutes of conversation, the two, in what could be assumed were command-like positions, got back into the UTV and left, the others staying behind. It took over an hour for the bus to burn itself out. Once the flames had died down, the six men who had been watching it moved in for a closer look. Now that the sound of the crackling fire had dissipated, Ted could just make out what the men were saying.
"Huh? They bought it! They think it's an engine fire," Ted said.
"Told you it would work," Mike replied.
"Whatever, it's like seeing Bigfoot. Anyone who wasn't here won't believe it."
After making their way back, the three regrouped. Ted moved them farther back into the bush to compare notes.
"That was a hell of a fire," Ian said,
wiping his nose. I could feel the heat over here. Ted jutted his thumb at Mike.
Yeah, he likes to burn shit.
Mike smiled.
Now that's a fire.
What'd they do when they saw it? Ted asked.
They started jumping and hopping around, then called for backup, I guess. Two Hummers came running out of the camp.
How long did it take them to respond? Mike asked.
About 5 minutes. Longer than I would have thought.
Ted nodded.
All right, let's go find us a place to set up a hide.
They settled for a high spot covered in palmettos. Ian set a security position about 30 feet behind the first. The guys worked on camouflaging the hides, finishing around 2 in the morning.
Why don't you both get some sleep, and I'll keep the first watch, Ian said, as he crawled into the hide.
Mike yawned. Don't have to ask me twice.
Jamie pulled her bag up tighter around her. She wanted to sleep, but she couldn't.
Hey, Perez, you think the guys started that fire? She asked.
Perez was lying behind the saw, giving his eyes a break from the NVGs. He hated wearing the things. They always gave him a headache. He sighed. He was looking forward to Jamie going to sleep. When she was awake, she yammered on incessantly, and that wasn't helping his headache any. Perez sighed.
I doubt it. The object is not to be seen, not go starting a damn inferno. Besides, there wasn't any shooting. If they were involved, I'm sure we would have known.
Jamie thought for a minute, then closed her eyes. If it wasn't for Perez, she would have run over there to back them up, but he made her stay.
Oh well, maybe tomorrow we'll find out, she thought to herself.
Perez was thankful for the silence. He listened to the breeze as it sighed through the trees above. Periodically, he would hold the NVG up to an eye and scan the area. He liked it out here. No one around. Well, almost no one. Of all the things he missed, it was his solitude. He lived alone and liked it that way. During the day, he drove his truck, a terminal freight, around town. Even with this, he didn't have to talk to too many people. Just back up and get loaded or unloaded, then back on the road. Perez was twisting a strip of palmetto frond around his finger when he heard something. He paused and waited to see if he'd hear it again. Again, he heard it. Quietly picked up the NVG and peered through. About 5 yards out, at his 11 o'clock, a skunk was nosing around the scrub. Perez's eyes went wide.
That thing better not come over here, he thought.
He watched as the rodent searched for its dinner, the white stripe running down its back, glowing in the goggles. After a while, the animal wandered off, leaving Perez with his thoughts, and finally, some quiet. Chapter 11. It was getting late in the day, and the sun was beginning to wane. We started smoking the gator we weren't going to use for tonight's meal, knowing it would probably take a couple of days to finish it. Danny, Jeff, and I were cutting the rest of the meat into strips, while Thad tended the smoker. Taylor and Little Bit were sitting around the fire. It was then I heard the first buzz, that high-pitched annoyance that can only mean one thing. Mosquitoes.
Well, it had to happen eventually, I said.
Danny looked up.
What?
You heard any skeeters yet?
No, you?
Just did. First one.
What are we gonna do about them? Jeff asked. Out here, they'll probably carry you away.
Oh yeah, in the summer they can be a bitch, Danny said. Jeff stopped cutting.
Damn! First bite of the season. Man, I'd give my left nut for a can of off.
There's a couple of natural remedies. Not as great as off, but better than nothing, I said.
What's better than nothing?
Thad asked, as he came for more meat.
A cure for the skeeters, Jeff said.
Thad looked around.
Yeah, it's about that time of year. What kind of ideas you got, Morg?
We need to get some myrtle berries and leaves, boil them up, and use the extract. It's a technique the Seminoles used.
Nice. I think we should build a cover over the table, too. The rainy season's gonna start soon, Thad said. I nodded. Excellent plan, my brother. Jeff smirked.
Well, aren't you two just the nature nuts?
Mel came out of the cabin with some bags for the dried meat.
Hey, hon, where's Leanne been? I haven't seen her all day, I said.
She's lying in her bed, she said, nodding toward the cabin. I looked back at the cabin. She feeling okay? She's on her period. She was complaining earlier.
Is that all it is?
She seemed a little off this morning.
She's been acting a little weird lately, Mel said, as she tucked dry gator into a bag.
Weird in what way? Have you talked to her much recently? She's been awfully mopey. I thought about it for a minute. I guess I haven't. Not much, anyway. Not since the whole thing with Ashley went down. I'll go talk to her later. The girls wanted to go for a walk the other day. Maybe I'll just ask her to go. Mel smiled. That'd be a good idea. She took the bags of meat and headed back for the cabin.
Kids, what can you do? Thad said.
No, Thad. Girls. Whole different universe, I replied, causing Thad to laugh.
Better you than me, Danny said.
Shit, those girls are as much yours as they are mine. Little Bit already calls you her other daddy.
I turned to where she was sitting by the fire. Isn't that right? She was poking at the fire with a stick and looked up.
What?
Isn't Danny your other daddy?
She sat back in her chair and smiled.
Yep, I got two daddies.
I looked back at him and smiled.
Ha, by the way, you owe me about 4 years worth of raising our kid.
Thad laughed, slapping the table. Danny laughed too.
More like three, maybe two, as much time as she spends at my house.
Okay, you got me there.
You guys ready for some of this for dinner?
Thad asked, holding up a piece of the tail. He was met with a chorus of hell yes. Thad smiled and took the meat to the smoker. With it, we are going to have a pot of watercress. Mel and Bobby were going to take care of the veggies. They had gotten pretty good at steaming the tender leaves on the fire.
Hey, Danny, you want to come give me a hand real quick? I asked.
Sure, what's up? We need to set up a warning system out by the pigs. Someone's been sniffing around over there. Danny's head snapped around.
Who? What?
Thad saw some tracks over there. I've got a little something to give us notice if they come back.
Hold on. Tracks like people tracks? Jeff asked.
As I started toward the pig pen, I looked back over my shoulder.
Yeah.
Danny and Jeff both caught up quickly. At the pen, I showed them the tracks, which were faded now. I took out the kit I had and explained what it did.
That's not going to do much, Jeff replied with a frown.
No, but whoever's keeping watch will see it. Plus, whoever trips it will know that we're watching and probably haul ass, I replied. It was nearly dark when we set the flare up and ran the wire. The trigger for the simulator was a spring held under tension. If the wire was tripped, the spring would release, pulling the igniter and lighting the flare.
We need to pay special attention to this area, Danny said. Some fucker thinks he's going to come in here and steal our hogs.
His voice grew increasingly irate.
I'll kill his ass.
I'm taking the first watch tonight.
Calm down, man. We don't know if they were after the hogs. We don't know what they were after.
That's what I'm worried about. They may see the pigs as a bonus, Jeff said.
We need to make sure the girls know someone is poking around, Danny said. I nodded my agreement. Later, as we ate the delicious gator dinner that Thad had prepared, I cleared my throat.
All right, everyone. We noticed some tracks down by the pig pens. We need to be cautious and watch out for any possible intruders, I said. I went on to stress that everyone needed to keep their weapons handy just in case. Of everyone, it was Little Bit that was the most bothered by the news. She was scared the hermit was coming back to get her, she told me, burying her face in Mel's side.
He's not coming back, baby, I said.
Are you sure?
Without telling why I was sure, I replied, positive. He's never coming back.
Don't worry, Ashley, we'll protect you, Taylor said. I smiled at her. I was happy she was being a good big sister. Her other sister, though, kept silent during this whole exchange. Leanne was picking at her plate and didn't even look up during the discussion. I imagine that dealing with her period under the current circumstances wasn't pleasant, and I hoped that was all that was wrong, but I couldn't be sure.
Dad, can I stand watch too? Taylor asked.
I didn't answer right away, as there was a lot to consider in response to her question. She had a weapon and knew how to use it, but the biggest question was if the time came, could she shoot, and would she do it fast enough? Before I could answer, Danny looked up from his plate.
If it's okay with your mom and dad, you can hang out with me tonight when I'm on watch. I can show you what to do.
She looked over at me and Mel.
Please,
she asked, drawing out the word. I glanced at Mel, who said,
as long as Danny's there, then yes.
Taylor smiled and went back to eating. I looked at Danny with a grin. He nodded his head slightly and returned to his dinner as well.
Thad, this lizard is good, Jeff said.
Thanks. Did what I could with it. Little salt and pepper go a long way. Wish the old man was here. He'd love this.
Yeah, he'd be aching to shoot one, I said with a smile.
Chewing a bite of the watercress, I looked at Mel.
What'd you guys do to this?
It's good, too. Even better than the last time.
We spiced it up a bit, added some garlic and butter powder, Bobby replied.
It's damn good, Thad added, and pointed across the table at Little Bit. Even she likes it.
Little Bit scrunched her nose. It's okay.
I laughed.
Yeah, she's just hungry.
I hear you guys are going to build something over these tables, Bobby said.
Yeah. We're going to use some of the river cane and build a canopy, Thad said.
Mel looked up, her eyes bright.
Oh, like a tiki hut? I've always wanted a tiki hut.
Thad laughed.
Somehow I don't think whatever we come up with will look much like a tiki hut.
Sure it will. If you make it from that bamboo type stuff with a thatched roof, it will look just like one.
We aren't going to be thatching the roof. We're going to use plastic sheeting. Sorry, ladies, Danny said.
That's going to be ugly as sin, Bobby said.
I think you should use palmettos or something and make it look like a tiki hut, Mel added.
Danny, Thad, and I were laughing.
This isn't a design contest. It's just to provide some shelter over the tables.
With the weather warming up, it's going to start raining a lot soon, and we need somewhere to get out of it, besides the cabins, I said.
Mel looked at Bobby. Don't worry, they'll thatch it.
Bobby nodded her agreement, leaving us menfolk to stare at one another. Jeff was the only one laughing now.
Leanne, can you and Taylor clean up the dinner dishes? Mel asked.
Leanne leaned forward.
Mom, I don't feel good. I want to go to bed.
Mel looked at her closely.
Leanne, you just came from bed. Are you sure you're okay? Is it just cramps or...
She trailed off. Leanne replied with an edge in her voice that I had never heard before.
Jeez, Mom, I'm fine. I just don't feel good, that's all.
Mel opened her mouth to say something, but Jeff interrupted.
Don't worry, Mel. I'll help,
Jeff said, as he stood up and started collecting plates.
Can I go, please? Leanne asked.
All right, go to bed, but I don't like that attitude you just gave me. Leanne walked away toward the cabin, shoulders slumped.
Whatever, she muttered.
I heard that. Leanne Carter, you don't whatever your mother, Mel yelled after her.
I'm sorry,
Leanne yelled back, slamming the door to the cabin. Taylor and Jeff looked at each other, eyebrows raised.
Mel, I'm worried about her, I said.
She has been acting strange, Bobby said.
I just don't know what to do. She won't get out of bed, now she's giving me attitude, Mel said.
I don't think it's just her period.
I nodded, but couldn't think of any solution.
Maybe she just needs some alone time. We're all in close quarters, I offered.
I guess, Mel said, not looking convinced.
Taylor walked back up with Jeff, so we stopped our conversation. I didn't want her to hear us talking about her sister. She slung her MP5 and sat on the table. It was obvious she was excited to be standing watch. I just hoped she was ready for it. Danny came over and took a seat by the fire, laying his carbine across his lap.
All right, Ashley. Time for bed, Mel said. Aw, come on, Mom. I want to sit by the fire for a while.
Mel pointed toward the cabin.
Nope. Time for bed. Let's go.
Little Bit put on her best pout. I nodded toward the cabin. Very reluctantly, she walked over to me, falling face first into my lap. I gave her a hug and told her goodnight. She mumbled a muffled goodnight into my lap and stood up.
Goodnight, Little Bit, Danny said.
She went over and hugged him around the shoulders.
Good night, Danny.
With shoulders slumped, a very sad Ashley trudged up toward the cabin.
She's such a little character, Danny said with a smile.
Yep, she's the littlest of the prettiest, I said. Taylor's head popped up.
Hey!
I laughed. I said the littlest of the prettiest. You're the biggest of the prettiest. And Leanne is the middlest of the prettiest. See how that works? She smiled.
Oh, now I see. You're funny, Dad.
Hey, Danny, when are we going to start our watch?
Danny let out a loud burp.
We already have.
Thad came from behind Danny with some wood for the fire.
That was a nice one.
Danny smiled. Thanks.
What do you mean we've already started? I thought we would go hide or something.
Thad tossed a piece of wood onto the fire, causing a shower of red sparks to rise up into the air.
Nope. This is pretty much it. We just sit around and keep an eye on things.
It was clear that standing watch didn't seem so much fun to her anymore.
Oh, was all she replied.
Jeff reappeared with his AK in hand and took a seat by the fire as well.
Man, I wish we had some coffee, Jeff said as he plopped down.
Me too. I'd kill for a cup right now, Thad said.
Suddenly, I had an idea. Danny, you still got all that stuff you used to steal from hotels?
Danny stared into the fire for a moment.
Ha! I forgot all about that. I think I do, he said, hopping up.
Never pegged Danny as a thief. What sort of stuff did you steal from hotels? Jeff asked.
You know, the coffee, the tea bags, the stuff they leave out for you. Thad's head snapped up.
You think he's actually got some coffee?
I'll bet on it. I just can't believe I didn't remember he had it till now.
Danny came back carrying 2-gallon Ziploc bags, stuffed full. He opened one and dumped its contents onto the table. Packs of coffee, sugar, and creamer spilled across the table. Thad smiled and jumped up, grabbing a pot and filling it from the bucket filter at the end of the table. Danny was picking through the pile.
Here you go, boys.
Taylor cleared her throat.
Sorry, boys and girl.
Man, I can't believe I'd forgotten all about this stuff, he said,
as he sorted the items into piles. When he finished sorting, he counted out 12 packs of coffee. Jeff stood over the loot, rubbing his hands together.
Whoo! We're gonna make some coffee!
Let me see 3 or 4 of them bags, Thad said, a giant smile on his face.
Danny tossed them over.
Thad, I haven't seen you this happy in a long while, I said.
Well, Morg, it's been a long while since I had a decent cup of coffee. I figured we were out forever.
I want some too, Taylor said.
You'll get the first cup, Thad said.
Mel and Bobby walked back out.
Get her to sleep? I asked.
Yeah.
Only took 2 stories and some groaning from Leanne.
What are you guys doing? Mel said.
Making coffee, Jeff said excitedly.
Oh, nice. I want some too, Mel said.
You can have mine, Bobby said.
What? You don't like coffee, Bobby?
Thad asked.
Nope, never have. Now, if we had some beers, that'd be a different story. We all laughed.
The coffee began to bubble, and Thad pulled it off the fire and set it on the table. Cups were quickly produced, and sugar and creamer packs were passed out to those that wanted it.
Oh my God, that's good, Jeff said, as he stretched out in his chair and rocked his head back.
Yeah, after going a while without it, it's really nice.